We're starting this deep dive with a moment that is, I think, just so relatable. It comes from our source material, from Rachel, a neurodiversity specialist, and she's learning these essential life skills.
Yeah, and we're not talking about, you know, learning to code or something technical. She was mastering self-observation.
Right, learning how to watch her own body, her thoughts, her patterns, and this is the key, doing it all without that immediate judgment we all have.
So after putting in all this work, she just kind of pauses, and she says this thing that I think hits every curious person at some point.
Nobody taught me this in school.
And that, I mean, it seems like a simple complaint, but it's actually really profound. She's not just saying, why didn't they teach me how to do my taxes or, you know, change a tire?
No, not at all. She's pointing to something much deeper. A fundamental flaw in the rules we were given, the actual plan for how to know things.
It's a gap in what philosophers call epistemology.
Okay, so let's unpack that term. That's a big academic word. Let's put it in plain language. If knowledge is a house, then epistemology is the blueprint.
Exactly. It's the blueprint. It dictates what counts as a wall, what's a good foundation, all of it.
And what Rachel realized is that the blueprint she was handed, the standardized one, was just. It was totally incompatible with what she needed to build.
Right. She found that before she could genuinely learn something, really integrate it, she had to first. She had to actively dismantle the instructions she'd been following her whole life.
Dismantle the plan. And that's really our mission today. We're diving into that tension. We're calling it the unlearning curve. We really want to unpack why so many people feel like they have to unlearn how to learn before they can get to real knowledge.
And it's all about that friction, you know, the friction between standardized instruction and true self-directed discovery.
This is a huge deal. It's not just about school. It affects how we train for jobs, how we do therapy, even just trying to learn a new hobby.
So let's start with that core conflict Rachel talks about. For a lot of people, the standard model, the plan, it works.
It totally works. You show up, you take notes, you memorize the steps, you pass the test.
Yeah.
The goal is just efficient external transfer of data.
But for Rachel, her need was for what she calls participatory engagement. She couldn't just receive the information. She had to sort of become it.
And that's where the whole system starts to break down for people like her. I mean, if your entire educational world is built for just receiving and repeating information,
then anyone who needs a more internal, self-directed process is immediately going to be in conflict with that system. For them, being told to follow the plan without asking why feels, it feels counterproductive, even like a kind of violence to their way of knowing.
Okay, to get the weight of that feeling, we have to talk about her concept of the body maps of meaning. This is where the learning either sticks or it just bounces off.
I love that phrase, body maps of meaning. It's such a great anatomical metaphor for how we learn. She's saying that information from the outside, a book, a lecture, it doesn't just become knowledge because your brain heard the words.
No, it has to pass through what she calls her inner space.
Mm-hmm.
It has to actually engage with her body, her cellular understanding, her nervous system. It has to find a place to land on those internal maps.
And if it doesn't, if it can't find a connection to something she already knows in her bones, it just bounces off.
It might be there for a little while, you know, long enough to pass the test. But it's never really integrated. It never becomes part of your personal operating system.
Right. And think about that in your own life. Have you ever sat through, say, a mandatory corporate training?
Oh, absolutely. You understand every slide, every bullet point in the plan. But then a week later, when you actually need to do the thing, it's just gone.
That's the bounce-off effect. Your brain registered the data, but your body, your actual experience, never claimed it.
So to understand why we ended up with a system that values instruction over this kind of discovery, we have to look back a little. This wasn't an accident.
No, it was very systemic. If you go way back to what the source is called the Academy of Old Think Ancient Athens, Plato's school learning was a practice.
Right. It was something you did. It was walking. It was talking. It was dialogue, contemplation. Philosophy wasn't a class you took for credit. It was a whole way of life. It was discovery-centered.
But then you see this big shift. Monasteries start evolving into the first universities, and this practice of sacred reading, which was slow and contemplative.
Lectio Divina.
Right. It was all about internalizing a truth. That gets replaced by academic reading, which is fast, analytical, and it's all about extracting data.
So contemplative practice gets swapped out for standardized curriculum. The whole focus moves from learning as discovery to the much more efficient learning as instruction.
And when you see that long historical line, you can understand why Rachel, growing up in our system, felt that she was, and this is her quote, kind of difficult as a child.
That's a painful thing to realize, isn't it? When you're a kid who needs that participatory learning, you're the one who's always asking why.
Always. You don't just want to know the steps in the plan, you want to understand the whole system behind the plan.
But a standardized classroom is built for two things, obedience and speed. That kind of deep questioning, it just slows everything down. It can even feel like you're challenging authority.
The problem isn't that these kids aren't smart. Rachel was obviously very intelligent. The problem is the system forced her to learn how to perform.
She got good at following the plan, acing the tests, getting the grades. But she says the whole process just felt like suffocation. She had to ignore her own internal wisdom to succeed on the outside.
And that leads to the critical question BK raises in the source material. The solution isn't to just have no instruction at all. That would be chaos. It's about reframing the whole thing to be discovery-centered. So the center of gravity is always internal. It's embodied.
So let's just nail this down. Why did we build this system in the first place? Why trade Plato's walking discussions for neat rows of desks and ringing bells?
The short answer is industrialization, the 1800s. It sounds blunt, but it's true. Schools were retooled to be training grounds for factory work.
Wow. So they needed people who could show up on time.
Obey a schedule, follow instructions without question, and do the same task over and over. The goal wasn't to create contemplative citizens. It was to create compliant, predictable workers to run the machines.
And the system we have now is basically still running on that old industrial software. It favors an external paradigm of truth.
Exactly. What does that paradigm value? It values what you can measure, what you can replicate, what you can explain efficiently.
Which works great for engineering, but it completely pushes aside Rachel's more holistic view. Her idea that everything that is just IS and is relevant.
And everything includes the body, intuition, that felt sense of knowing that you can't really put on a spreadsheet, but you know is real.
So we've built a system that's perfectly efficient for people whose nervous systems are wired for that kind of external transfer. But for embodied learners, for neurodivergent people, for highly sensitive people.
For them, that industrial system fundamentally broke their natural way of learning. It forced them to ignore their own wisdom just to keep up and follow the plan.
So how do we start to fix that break?
The sources point to a framework from Rachel. She calls it the reciprocity of inner and outer.
And this idea of reciprocity, it's the perfect antidote to that bounce-off effect we talked about. It means the outer world, the information, the plan, it shapes your inner experience, yes. But your inner experience also shapes how you see the outer world. It's a two-way street.
It turns information from a command into an invitation to have a conversation with yourself.
Yeah.
And she breaks it down to practical steps, the reciprocity practice. Okay, and this is really the core mechanic of embodied learning. So let's walk through it. Step one is encounter. You just engage with the material, read the chapter, watch the video. But the key is you do it without any pressure, no judgment, just let it in.
And then step two, and this is the one our speed-obsessed system never allows for.
Yeah.
Pause. Before you analyze, before you grab your highlighter, you just stop.
If you close the book, maybe walk away for a minute. That pause creates the space for the next step, which is maybe the most important one. Feel.
What is your body actually doing with that information? Where did it land? And she gives these amazing, super specific examples like, did your chest tighten up?
Or conversely, did your cells suddenly feel, and I love this phrase, green and electric, which signal, you know, yes. Or did they feel heavy and gray, signaling a disconnect? That physical feeling is your first data point.
Right. Before any intellectual analysis. Then, once you have that feeling, step four is connect. You take that tight chest or that electric feeling and you connect it to a previous memory. When have I felt this way before? You're building a bridge from the new information to your existing body map.
And only then do you get to step five, which is integrate. Now you can bring your analytical mind back in. But your analysis is centered on the discovery you just made inside yourself. The learning is yours. It's self-offered.
And the final step, step six, is express. You complete the loop. You have to make something external again, write about it, draw something, talk it out. That's what really solidifies the knowledge across all your maps of meaning.
When you learn this way, it changes everything. A teacher isn't just an instructor anymore. They're a guide. A book isn't a manual you have to follow. It's a companion on your journey.
And the plan itself, the information, it's not a decree. It's just an invitation to begin your own discovery.
So we've seen how our systems are just overwhelmingly designed for speed, for transfer, for making sure everyone sticks to the plan. But what this deep dive really shows is that true lasting knowledge often needs a slower, a much more personal and embodied process.
The big takeaway for me is that the issue isn't that embodied learners can't learn from the current system. It's that they learn differently. And maybe counterintuitively, by taking that slower internal path, they might actually learn things much more deeply for long-term wisdom, not just short-term performance.
And if this whole idea of unlearning to learn really resonates with you, there's a lot more to explore. You could look into self-directed learning or embodied knowing, like the work in the body keeps the score. Or even those older contemplative practices like Lectio Divina, reading as a dialogue with the text.
So we want to leave you with a final provocative thought that kind of builds on everything we've talked about today. What if we radically redesigned our learning environments, schools, workplaces, even our communities? What if discovery was just as valued, just as rewarded, as successfully following the instruction plan? What if, instead of asking everyone, did you get it? We started asking a different question entirely. What are you discovering?